Hi, I'm KSL's Debbie Worthen. 4 years ago, my son Asher was diagnosed with autism. After getting our footing, we decided it was time to celebrate the news with all of you. And that's how Celebrating the Spectrum was born. Each week, we consult with the experts and others who are learning to navigate life with a loved one who has special needs. This is a place where we find hope, look for solutions, and connect with those working to create a better world of inclusion. Thanks for joining us for today's episode of Celebrating the Spectrum. I am very excited about today's guest. She is truly inspiring. Charlotte DeLeste and her husband Ron live in Madison, Wisconsin, where she's a news anchor. Their son Giovanni is the reason 10 years ago they founded a nonprofit called Gio's Garden. And I'm excited to get to know her today. Charlotte, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. This is great.
So we have a mutual friend, Amy Reed, who you worked with a while ago, and she's now a producer here at KSL. When I started the podcast, she's like, Debbie, you have to talk to Charlotte. She's done this amazing thing. And then she's like, here's her number and you can figure out the rest. So you sent me a link, which I actually watched, of a story that your co-anchor did when you celebrated the 10 years of Gio's Garden. So we're going to get to that in just a second. So let's talk about your son, Gio. Tell me how this all started.
Oh my goodness. So he was born in October of 2005 and everything was perfect. And then in December of that year, he started having, it sounded like nightmares, I guess, you know, like he would wake up in the middle of the night, maybe like more like night terrors. And
but he's just a little guy. He's like 2 months old.
Nothing was happening. And eventually, fast forward like 6 months later, Ron says to me, it was during the day, he goes, I was feeding him and he had one of those episodes in front of me. And it looks like he was scared. And the best way we could describe it, it's like a little kid is in a big store and lost their mommy. And it's just terrifying.
Oh, okay.
And so we stayed up literally for a month. We got one of those video baby monitors and had a little camcorder back in the day. And anytime he would move, we would turn on that camcorder to record the video, the screen, to see, can we catch this? Finally, we did. And then in May of 2006, we had an appointment with our pediatrician just to go over some stuff. And it was toward the end. We're like, oh, by the way, can you check out these videos? We think that he's having night terrors, and we don't know what to do about it. And so she looked at the video and she looked up at us, Debbie, and I will never forget this. And she said, those aren't night terrors. Those are seizures.
Oh my gosh.
You need to get to the hospital right away.
What were you thinking at that point?
Well, at that point, I felt like I got hit with a bag of bricks. And then everything she started saying after that sounded like Charlie Brown's teacher, just that wah, 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 wah. I'm like, I don't know what the heck is going on and what am I doing here? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you kind of just go through the motion and then, you know, the nurse takes you. We ended up going to the hospital the next day to get a quick 30-minute EEG and we got the results the next day. And they said that he is having seizures. And here's some medication. And by this time, he's only 7 months old.
But are you thinking oh my gosh, he's been having seizures for months. I wish we would have recognized that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I felt like a terrible mom at that point. Like we just got started and already I'm failing mother of the year here.
No.
And like my poor baby has been seizing and we had no idea because they are not the seizures that we think seizures are. You know, that we've seen on TV that they fall to the ground and they're convulsing and all this horrible stuff. And see, you know, we learned that there is like so many different types of seizures and people could be having them right in front of you and you had no idea.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So we ended up having an MRI because they wanted to see like, okay, well, we know he's having seizures. Let's see if there's anything in his brain. We had an MRI and they found an arachnoid cyst, which basically they don't do anything. They're just in between the lobes of the brain. So they just exist.
Okay.
But they said that, you know, it shouldn't do anything, but there's nothing else there. So they gave us the option. Let's go in and take that that cyst out and let's just see if it works. And so he had his first brain surgery at 10 months.
Oh my gosh. And is he your first child?
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
My first baby.
Wow.
And so he had his first brain surgery at 10 months. And in hindsight, that cyst didn't do anything.
Hmm.
He ended up having two more brain surgeries. Let's see. He was 10 months at the first one. I think he was like 6 years old on the second one, and then 12 years old for the third brain surgery. I don't know. It's like they all run into each other.
Yeah.
Fast forward, he ended up being diagnosed with Lennox-Gastaut syndrome, which is a rare form of childhood epilepsy with no known cure. And so we have gone through all the gamut of the medications and everything, and nothing really works. And it was to the point that he was having over 100 seizures a day, every single day of
wow.
his life. And there was no learning happening. He, was falling way behind on those milestones that you're supposed to be taking. And then we also got the diagnosis of autism. So because like one can kind of sort of produce the other, but which came first, the cart or the horse
right,
type
yeah,
of thing.
Right, mm-hmm.
And I was like, at this point, just throw all the diagnoses in at this point. We've got a big wagon. And so we ended up, he just had so much therapy, so many surgeries. The surgeries, even the brain surgeries, caused him paralysis on one side of his body. And finally, he's gained up to about 80% of movement back on his one side. Some of his language has started to come back a little bit, but developmentally, he's 3 years old in a 17-year-old body.
Interesting. Okay.
And with Lennox-Gastaut, at least back in the day, a specialist had told me that the life expectancy for someone like Gio would be about 20 years.
Hmm.
He said that most likely it would be a seizure that would take him out. Like it's really weird. He kind of like played out the whole scenario. He's probably going to have a seizure. It'll happen in the bathroom. He'll hit his head. And he'll be in the hospital and he'll end up dying from complications of pneumonia. And I was like, well, isn't that thrilling?
How old was your son when you're getting all of that news?
Oh, 3 years old.
Okay. So let's talk about what you and your husband go through when you start, because you know, the thing is when you have that first baby, especially, everything you think is going to be perfect. You know, you hear
right.
there are those moms that have a kid with complications. It's never going to be you. And,
yep.
you know, and but I do think as a journalist, we do sort of have this heightened worry because we cover
oh, yeah.
so much all the time. You know, I remember I was like barely pregnant with my oldest and I did this story on conjoined twins. And I was like, I need an ultrasound today. you know,
yep.
am I going to
oh,
have conjoined
yeah.
twins? But it does take a toll on the relationship. What was that like?
Oh my gosh. It's still to this day. I mean, we're lucky we're still married. you know, that's not as common for those with a special needs child. But it was tough. It was really, really tough trying to navigate this together when one person's up, the other person's down,
mm-hmm.
Vice versa. And also, I mean, let me throw a wrench into all of this. I grew up with a sister who has special needs.
Hmm.
And so this has been my entire life. My sister and I were like 7 years apart. So I've been in this world for well over 40 years. She has Down syndrome and autism on the extreme side. She's 43 now and still lives at home
right.
with my mom, and she's highly dependent. So I kind of felt like I was almost equipped for this.
Right. I was going to ask you that. Do you feel like that experience with her helped you or it
yes.
was kind of like, I don't know, made it worse because you have a really real picture of what life could be? I mean,
Yeah. You know, Debbie, it was both,
mm-hmm.
you know, first off it was like, okay, you know, I can handle this. This isn't new to me. This isn't my first rodeo in a sense. But then on the other hand, I was like, well, geez, like, lightning can strike twice.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ever say it can't.
Yeah.
And then you get to this isn't fair.
Yeah.
You know,
well, it's kind of like the stages of grief.
I never said the two words, why me?
Yeah.
But I was just like, come on, this isn't right. So it's like, when can this family lineage get a break here?
Yeah.
So, but then you can't stay there long.
No, you can't.
You can go back and visit every once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I always tell people. You can go ahead and go in that room where you want to just have that pity party and mope and scream the screams and feel all the negative feels.
Right.
And just be as ugly as possible. But then you got to come back out with that smile on your face and be like, you know what? I got this.
And you do. The thing is, you do. And they need you. You know, you're the mm-hmm. one. You are the, you and your husband, you're the ones. Okay. Yep. So he's 17 now. At what yes. point did you think we need to do something here? Because, you know, you're so overwhelmed. You have all this going on, and really the day to day is a huge challenge. I'm not going to say struggle, but it is a mm-hmm. challenge. You have all these expectations yeah. that really, you know, most couples don't have. At what point were you like, we need to do something and we can handle doing it now?
Yeah. So it was, so both of my boys, I have two boys, Gio, and then Benicio. They're 3 years apart, born the same day, not planned. I'm not that talented, Debbie. And so Benicio was great. He is a spunky baby to the point that he's also colicky. So I'm dealing with this colicky baby and a kid who, a Gio, who's seizing. At that point, he was seizing over 30 times a day. And most of these seizures are happening in the middle of the night. So there is no sleep happening. And I also was dealing with postpartum depression, but it was undiagnosed.
Oh,
so
you were feeling great. Sleep deprived, postpartum depression, colicky baby.
I mean,
do you look back and just think, how did I get through that?
Yeah. Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. And like, I'm surprised that like the universe just didn't take me out at some point. And, but it was at that time when, so Gio had turned three, I had Benicio dealing with all of this stuff. And then we got this magical packet in the mail from the state of Wisconsin saying that, you know, what Gio is, now qualifies for all these different services. Mm-hmm. And so I was reading about respite care. And I was like, well, what the heck is this business? And it said, like, you know, nurse can come to the house and help take care of your medically, you know, challenged child and stuff. And I'm like, sign me up.
Right.
So I called them up and I'm like, yes, please. Mm-hmm. They sent somebody over to do the intake. And, you know, it's really depressing because then you're seeing like how your child is not doing. And all these things that he hasn't reached, and you're like, you're reminded of all
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I hate that kind of stuff.
You know,
and it does happen.
Horrible.
Yeah, it's
absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
And so she was like, okay, I will enter all of this stuff into the system and I'll let you know how it turns out. A week later, they call us up and say that he only qualifies for 5 hours of respite a week.
Okay.
And that every year on his birthday, he'll get more time. And by the time he's six, he will have 40 questions or 40 hours, no questions asked.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay. I said, can I take those 5 hours like in one day? Oh no, you have to, it's only 1 hour a day.
Oh my goodness.
Like,
what's the point?
I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly, Debbie. I'm like, you can't do anything
yeah.
in an hour. I'm like, who can take a nap in that, you know, that time. I'm like, this is ridiculous. And so I said, okay, well, this doesn't seem right. And I said, there's got to be something wrong. And I'm like, what can I do? And she's just like, well, no, we find that Gio is not disabled enough.
Hmm.
And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I'm like, what qualifies as disabled enough, which just seems pathetic.
Well, I hate the terminology that we hear a lot. You know, I've heard some people on the show saying just to call it a difference would just be the kindest thing ever rather than a disability.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, but he's not disabled enough. I'm like, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. Where's your bar hanging here? So I said, okay, well then what do I do? How can I appeal this? And she's like, well, if you appeal it, you have to go to court. I'm like, are you kidding me? And she said, no. I'm like, this is ridiculous. And I said, so what do you think? She's like, I suggest you take the hours because at least it's something. And I was like, oh, heck no. I'm like, this isn't fair.
You're like, this is not my personality.
No.
To just take that news. Yeah.
And if there are other people out there who are hearing the same things and, you know, and then dealing with like whatever demons that they're battling, and I'm thinking, I, you know, admittedly, Debbie, there were times where I'm thinking, my baby is crying so much, I want to shake him. Mm-hmm. I wanted to shake him.
You're losing your mind.
Stop. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I can't do this. But what if there are other people out there who don't have that stopgap measure for mm-hmm. themselves? So I said, this is not going to happen. So I was talking with other people, telling them about this. I'm like, there's got to be something that we can do. And so I was talking with a nurse, talked with a speech therapist, teachers, other parents of special needs children who also were like, yeah, we're in the situation, or we know someone who's in this situation. And so we got together and we're like, okay, if we could develop something to help families, what would it be? And of course, everybody threw everything out there. It was like the perfect place
right.
for everybody.
Right.
And it was ridiculous. And I'm like, okay, this is fantastic. This is utopia, but we can't do that. So if we just, you know, funnel it all down, what is the one thing
yeah.
that we can start with? And that one thing was respite, mm-hmm. because it was the whole concept. If you can't take care of yourself, you can't take care of someone else.
Right.
And Debbie, you and I, we've been in news for all these years. We have read those stories mm-hmm. where, you know, parents end up losing it for one reason or another, or yeah. a caregiver, you know, it's just, there's just something there and you just don't know when somebody's going to snap or lose it.
And have you been surprised at times? Because I think, you know, I've done those stories for years too. I have always mm-hmm. felt like, well, I'm not that person. I'm always going to be fine.
Gosh, yeah.
You know, and then you get into these situations like you're talking about where it's just like, I'm about to lose my mind. I need help. And I feel mm-hmm. like it's lonely and there's no one to help me and no one can handle my kids. And I don't even know yeah. what to do. And anytime I walk out the door, I'm paying $50 to $100 for someone to come and watch my kids. And it's just felt yeah. like, there's got to be a better way, you know, mm-hmm. which sounds very similar to how you and these other parents were feeling.
Oh, yeah, very much so. So, I mean, that was one of the biggest challenges. And so we were looking around, like, hey, is there another program in the country that has something like this? You know,
was there?
Like, let's look at all of our, no, hmm. we were like, okay, how can we design this? And like, you know, do we're going to go to people's homes or do we didn't want a daycare.
Yeah.
We didn't want to do babysitting because, you know, these kids, they don't need a babysitter where you and I, when we were teenagers, Debbie, we would go to somebody's house, maybe play some games, but watch TV.
Right.
And
now
you
they're
know,
just on their cell phones the whole time.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So, but now it's like, no, these kids, you can't leave them alone. They need 24/7 like eyeballs. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, it was also a place where I'm thinking, where would I feel comfortable sending Gio to?
Yeah, that's the big thing too.
So, yeah. Like who can take care of my kid better than me? Nobody. But I'm going to try to make sure that I can find somebody that is close to it. And that's another thing too, is like, you know, I never wanted this. Of course I wanted this for Gio, but I couldn't openly fundraise. Like, hey, people of Madison, Wisconsin, can you give me money so you can help take care of my child?
Yeah.
Like that just didn't make any sense to me. Just knowing that there are so many other people out there who are so tired that they don't have the energy to use their voice to mm-hmm. ask for help or beg for help or whatever, or they just, there's just so much pride.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh, it's that you've heard this before, Debbie. Somebody else can use the help more than me. We're not that bad. Mm-hmm. Oh, we're doing okay. And it's those people who are like, oh, we really need the help.
Yeah.
We really need the help. We're trying to keep that stiff upper lip. So, but there was nothing else in the country. And we decided, okay, we're going to have a home where people can bring their child to and doesn't feel like an institution
yeah.
or a facility. And it's going to be one-on-one, like, hi, we're really excited to see you. And what are you working on at home with your therapies there? Or what do you need help on? Like, do you just need help sitting? Just mm-hmm. look, you know, working on that core strength?
Yeah.
Do you need help taking that first step? Do you need help making eye contact mm-hmm. with someone or using your sippy cup? Or let's play with shaving cream. Let's do the different feels and
right.
textures, anything. So that's what we decided to do. And there was no one else in the country doing this. And we're like, okay, so let's do this. And so we just, it was literally grassroots.
Yeah.
And we just started fundraising. And you know, we did let the county and the state know, hey, we want to do this. Maybe we can join forces somehow. Mm-hmm. They had offered like, oh, you know, yeah, this would be great. We can help definitely fund this, but we'd have to play under their rules.
Right.
They would tell us how to run the facility and how to take care of these kids. And I said, nope. I'm like, you can't even take care of my child.
Right. Right.
So I'm like, you're not going to tell me how to take care of these other kids. I'm like, this has been my wheelhouse for most of my life.
Yeah.
So you can keep your money, you can keep your rules. We're going to do our own thing.
Charlotte, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, she's talking about the lead up to Geo's Garden. That's what this place is called. And so we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. We are back with Charlotte DeLeste. She lives in Madison, Wisconsin, and 10 years ago, she started what's called Geo's Garden. Her son, Giovanni, was the reason behind all of this, and she's been talking about how she and other parents kind of started getting to this point where they realized what they would want when it comes to respite care. And isn't it funny, Charlotte, how you hear that term respite care? It's like, what does that even mean? I don't even know that I've ever heard that term. And then how valuable it can be. So what I was watching the story that, and we'll put a link to that as well, because I think that story is so great. Just really shows what you guys do. My first thought was, wow, this seems expensive. So how did you get past that hurdle? How did you get from the point where it's like, this is what we want to do. This is what it needs to be. We don't want to take state money because we want to do this the right way. But we need to pay for it.
Yeah, it was literally, you know, I tell people, I'm like, I don't have a business degree. I never started anything. All I do is I read words for a living. So it's like, I just have the story. I have a story about why this is needed, why this is important. But then I found other people around me who are 1,000 times smarter than me and know what they're doing. And they're like, okay, we're going to do this aspect here. I got the business part. I got the attorney stuff, all this. And it was literally, Debbie, just going out and telling the story. I could not believe that people actually, one, they made time, and they actually listened to me. And it's because it's, you know, it's so hard. There are so many nonprofits all over the place, but especially in Madison, we have the most, I believe, per capita. So it's like, it is for getting anybody's dollar. It is a huge challenge. And
it's interesting.
And not, you know, not everybody has a special needs someone in their life.
Right.
Or they just not even, you know, on their radar. But when it comes to, like, you know, animals, wow, everybody can associate with animals.
You got that right.
You know, my best friend,
right.
My best friend has her own nonprofit for dogs with cancer, and she makes hand over fist money, you know? And I'm like, if I could have a quarter of that, that would be fantastic. You
need to get a mascot. So, you need to get a dog there.
Yeah. I know, I do. I think, Geo's dog will be next.
Yeah.
But so, you know, it was hard. And so our goal was simple. We're trying to just make this simple, nothing fancy. $250,000 was what we were looking for.
That's what you needed.
We needed that for a house that we found, and then for staff. Because really, when you say, like, you know, money's going to operations, you hear that all the time. And people think, oh, business expenses. Our operation expenses are people.
Right.
Because our program are the respite workers. They're the ones. So, you know, so we were finding people, recreational therapists, occupational therapist, speech language therapist, physical therapist, art therapist, all those people that your children will need to have in their lives. So it's like, we're going to get you that jump start. Even if you're already having services or you're not in the system yet, we're going to get you going. So we limited the amount of kids that we could take. So we only could take 8 kids at once, during a 4-hour time period. That's how we would break out the day.
Okay.
Like morning, like an afternoon and evening.
But so those parents would get that 4-hour chunk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can you
and
imagine?
You can go out and, yeah. Oh, yeah. And we're located by a shopping area, yeah, restaurant. So there are Costco is down the street,
yeah,
from us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you can drop a ton of money at the Church of Costco is what I call it, you know, and spend all of your money, you know,
right,
all your time,
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
So so we're in a really good location and parents can go out and spend that time with their other kids who, you know, it happens. They get ignored.
They do.
Your significant other, go on a date, you know, be like, hey, I'm Charlotte. Who are you again?
Mm-hmm.
You know, taking a nap, getting your hair cut, or just sitting outside and listening to nothing would be fantastic. And so what we did at the beginning, we did it all for free. We didn't charge the families because just from our experience,
mm-hmm,
our expenses were drained.
Right.
Because we didn't get, you know, the waivers or whatever, the grants and stuff right away. And you're spending all this extra for these different things because you are so desperate to try to find a cure for something or some type of tincture that might help,
yeah,
with something that insurance won't cover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're just looking for the next magical potion. And so we know that families are already strapped. So it's like, if we can help them out with this, then we're going to do it. So we did that for many years, but then it was not sustainable.
I was wondering, is it sustainable?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what did you do?
Yeah. We ended up doing a sliding scale, but still offered scholarships.
Great.
So, so that's what basically, you know, our fundraising, we would say, okay, you're paying for the programming and you're going to help pay for scholarships and you're going to pay like, hey, 1 month, you know, for $2,000, give somebody 1 month of respite,
mm-hmm,
you know? So we break it down like that. Hey, you want to give Olivia, here's Olivia. She does, you know, 8 sessions, you know, can you fund Olivia,
mm-hmm,
for however many sessions? So that we have found to be really successful. And then now the county has bought into the program.
Wow.
So now we are an option. So people who get a waiver from the county can choose to have some of their money spent for their respite at Geo's Garden.
I'm sure that's been a game changer.
Yes, most definitely. That we're being recognized. That, you know, it's like we're not here to try to steal anybody's thunder by any means. We're just trying to help, you know, bridge that gap because there are too many. I mean, there are lots of services out there, but there aren't a lot of people within those services.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying,
Debbie?
Because there's just not enough workers.
Mm-hmm.
And the burnout is so great.
I mean,
we personally have problems finding help for Geo here at home. And I can tell you the same is, it holds true for Geo's Garden.
Mm-hmm.
It is hard to find people. And, you know, and we're going to be particular. We don't want to be just a factory type of thing of, oh, here's somebody with, you know, a warm body and a beating heart.
It can't be that.
Watch a child. No.
Right.
No, 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 no. The standard is high. The standard is high. It's like, if you are not capable of taking care of Geo, then you're not going to take care of any other kids. So it's like, I look at everything like, if you can take care of my kid, then okay, we'll hire you.
Yeah.
You can take care of these other kids.
How many kids are you serving now?
Oh, well over 100 families.
And what is it like for you personally to see this, like, just continue to succeed and to thrive?
You know, when I will go and visit, sometimes I'll pop in and see the kids, and my heart, it does all these different things. It jumps for joy. It melts. It cries. It's to see that these kids are happy, that they're taken care of, that they're learning, and that they're experiencing something that I think a lot of kids haven't been able to get. And it just makes me happy that this is here. And I know we're making a difference. Mm-hmm. I know we keep in touch with all of the kids. You know, they graduate when they turn 7 years old. And we keep in touch with them because it's one of those things where it's just because you graduate doesn't mean like, okay, you're off to the next.
Right.
Good luck.
Yeah.
See you later.
Right.
It's like, you know, we still have our hand in the cookie jar in a sense, just to make sure everybody's okay. But, you know, like an example, Debbie, like of a family that we helped, which I had no idea that it would go this far. I thought it would just be some families just like mine.
Yeah.
We just needed some extra care because there's nobody else around,
right.
No family around,
yeah.
No friends
mm-hmm.
that can take care of them. We had some grandparents who ended up getting some temporary custody of their twin grandchildren who were living in Chicago. They're 3 years old, and the parents were very bad into drugs.
Okay.
So bad that they locked these twins in the basement in dog cages separately. And apparently these cages, that's actually putting it nicely, they were basically plywood boxes, but the front door was like those dog doors. And they never got any socialization. I mean, imagine, basically it's like Tarzan.
Yeah.
A baby Tarzan. They don't know how to walk. They don't know how to be with humans. And so we got them. And when they were at the house, it was obnoxious. We would have to separate them out from the other kids. Mm-hmm. We'd have to lessen the amount of kids we were allowed in the house because it turned out to be not the greatest, the safest situation
yeah.
for the other children.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, that's the thing.
You know?
It's like the human brain.
Yeah.
It's been
uh-huh.
damaged.
And you know, and these grandparents are like,
they're probably so in over their
what
head.
What do we do?
Oh, yeah. Can
right,
you even imagine?
Right.
They're just like, we don't even know.
Yep. And so at this point, we're like, okay, you're going to get all these evaluations. Get all the labels you can. Get
right,
all
right.
the diagnoses.
The more, the
you
better.
Can because
yep. the,
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something that you fight in the beginning.
Yeah.
You're like, no. But then you're like, no. Give them to me because right. then I get more services.
Yes, you
I
get more resources.
Help.
Exactly.
You know, like how sad is that? But we're like, take them all and don't be offended. And so, you know, we got them the services, and then those services were coming to GEOs to work with the kids there too. So it's like, just get everything. And we got those kids school ready. That's the
wow.
whole point. Get these kids so they can stand in line and wait, stand on that red circle that has a number 2 on it.
Mm-hmm.
Keep your hands to yourself, you know, all that. They learned how to do that. They learned how to play with other kids to the point, Debbie, they started getting those labels taken away.
And what was
you
that
know?
Like for everyone involved to watch that transpire?
Well, at first it was like, oh no, you know, it's like, how horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And can we do something?
Yeah.
What can we do? And, but then by the end, it was like, dang, this worked.
This worked. This
know?
Is amazing.
It worked.
Right.
It worked. And it's like, we helped these
yeah.
two kids, you know? And it's like, it's such a beautiful thing. And it's like, okay, if we close the doors right now, we helped.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
We made a difference. And isn't that what people want to do?
You hope that, you know?
Yeah.
I find it fascinating, though, that when you were creating Geo's Garden, you knew this would never be for him. This would all
right.
be for other kids.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's pretty philanthropic. That's a good heart when you're like, it's not going to help Geo, but this is what we needed and we can do this.
Yeah. You know, and I think back to growing up with my sister, Michelle, and, you know, my parents emigrated here from the Philippines. They had no family. And then my sister was born, and it was rough.
Mm-hmm.
And I can think back to seeing my mom and the troubles that she had raising my sister, not having anybody around, and realizing now my mom was sad at times. Mm-hmm. My mom did cry, you know, and thinking my mom could have used this help back in
the '70s. Oh yeah. Think how little was back then. I mean, hasn't there been part of you where it's like, okay, if there's ever been a time to have a child with disabilities, mm-hmm. it's now. I mean, we have research and you know, supports and a tsunami coming our way of inclusion societally is just monumental.
Yeah, that it's like there's no more separation. It mm-hmm. shouldn't be separated. In St. Louis, where I'm from, my sister went to a school where it was just a school for special needs. Mm-hmm. 3 to 21 years old, that's all. That's it. There was no inclusion.
Well, yeah.
You're not setting up these humans for success.
No.
For whatever that could be down the road.
I joke that it was like, you know, back in my days in junior high, it was like the gym coach was with all the special needs kids. And I mean, with zero mm-hmm. skill to do anything, it's just like babysit these kids because we don't know what to do with them. So I am so thankful for all the research. Okay, so what have the biggest challenges been here? And I think you've already asked this question. I had this down. Would you do it again?
Biggest challenge, definitely raising money.
Mm-hmm.
It is so hard to get people to believe in what you do and to become a consistent donor.
Right.
That is one. Finding people to work.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, you know, it's tough. It is hard work. Especially like, you know, we have had some of our, we call them, you know, some of our GEO's friends, some of them have passed away.
Hmm.
You know, you get attached to these little humans and you love them just like their own, like they're your own. But you know, they're also sick. Mm-hmm. They're dealing with stuff. And then, you know, so losing, you know, your kids, that's really, really hard. And I think also just personally, what's hard to see is the need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to close. I want to close so badly because it's exhausting.
Right.
It's exhausting. You work full time in a very demanding, very showy type of business. Right. There's a lot of expectations mm-hmm. on us. And then you've got your family, which you are spread out all over the place. And then you've got your little side gig, right?
Which is really like the thing.
Trying to help other people.
Yeah.
And so would I do it again? My gosh, you know, I want to say no, Debbie, but no, I do.
You would absolutely.
You would. Yes.
Yeah. How could you not?
Because,
especially seeing the success that these kids have had and the help that it's given these families. How could you even consider not doing it again if you had that opportunity?
Exactly. Yeah. And then I just think of what could have happened if there was nothing like this to those families.
Yeah.
Where would they be now?
Mm.
So
yeah, you made lasting change. That's amazing.
Yeah. I might not hear about some of it. Fine. But, you know, if that's all we want to do, just make a difference, make a positive difference and hope that it just keeps going and somebody else will do the same down the road.
So I always ask this question at the end, but what would you like to see the future bring in terms of inclusion and acceptance for the neurodiverse people in our lives?
Oh, you know, it would be great that there's no more conversation about it, that mm-hmm.
it's just the norm.
It just is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not nothing that we have to shine a spotlight on anymore. It's just an automatic, I think. I think it should just be an automatic blending of anything. Like an example, I've been trying to get Gio on the football team for 3 years now, not to play football, but just to be a water boy.
Part of something.
He says, be part of a team.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And he's a great cheerleader and says he will come up to you and he will smack you on the back, pat you like, good job. He doesn't realize he's doing it so hard, but he's like, he's so supportive.
Right.
He could be a total like, hey, good job, quarterback.
Yeah.
Or, oh, you'll do better next time. Like just to be part of the team and to not only be, you know, to see what it's like,
mm-hmm.
but for all those other people to see what it's like to be in Gio's world.
Yeah.
So
it's win-win.
You know, I say that, you know, this is Gio's world and we just live in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I would love other people to experience that, not just Gio's, but everybody else's right. world like right. that. It should just be an automatic.
Yeah. No, I love that. That's great. Okay. If people want more information or if they want to donate or if they mm-hmm. want to start one of these in their community, how do they get in touch with you?
They could definitely go to the website, geosgarden.org. It's geosgarden.org. Website there. You can also find me on Facebook. Just Google Charlotte Deleste. You'll find me there. And also, we're having a fundraiser on Friday, December 9th. It's our biggest fundraiser of the year. It's live in person and worldwide. Debbie, I will send you a link.
Yeah, send us a link for
sure.
Since
the pandemic, you know, we've had to change our fundraising strategies. And so we literally put on a show. It's like an hour and 15 minutes. You'll have some videos from celebrities across the country saying, like, doing a shout out for Geo's yeah. Garden. We've got bands doing videos, especially with specially crafted music, some covers for the occasion. It's really, really great. So we're going to be celebrating 10 years of Geo's Garden on Friday, December 9th. And that's, yeah, it's literally from, you know, like Potosi, Missouri to the Philippines. We're getting, you know, donors and stuff.
No, that's
which is
wonderful.
Fantastic. And just to shed the light yeah. of just like how great this world can be.
Right. Right.
So,
no,
and
you're
it's
absolutely
a great learning
right.
experience right. and exposure and awareness.
Yeah. Thank you for all you do. Thanks for coming on. I mean, really, just so inspiring. I know the life you live because I partly live it too. With the,
yes,
except
you
I don't
do.
Have the nonprofit, but it is rewarding and challenging and all the things. But
yeah,
but for you to be doing this is, I mean, what a service that you've given to your community, and it you are creating a legacy with Geo's Garden.
Well, thank you for doing what you do, for using your platform and using your voice to just shine the light of all of this stuff. I mean, you are doing something equally as fantastic. So I tip my hat to you, Debbie.
Well, thank you so much. Okay, Charlotte Deleste, thank you. And Celebrating the Spectrum is a KSL podcast.